Well, hello, hockey fans. Thanks so much for tuning in for this week's episode of From the Press Box. I am your host, Amy Johnson, the lead correspondent at the AHL Report. And of course, I'm joined every week by my fabulous co-host, the editor-in-chief and founder of Rocket Sports Media, Mr. Rick Stevens.
Happy to be here. Are we ready?
I think we're ready.
Let's get going. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. We have a lot to talk about again today. You know, we had a pretty stacked show last week, lots going on, and there's plenty to talk about today as well, especially since the Rocket were on the road this past weekend. And, of course, we were fortunate enough to be on the road with them as well. So we've got some exclusive audio from lots of one-on-one interviews we did with some players and, of course, Coach Sylvain Lefebvre over the weekend. Rick, so let's kind of just start with a brief synopsis of the weekend. These were two teams. They were playing in Springfield and in Hartford, and these were two of the worst going into this past weekend, two of the worst teams in the conference, Springfield especially being 2-11 going into Saturday night's game. And fans probably thought, oh, this will be an easy 4 points. And they end up walking away with only two after quite a horrible performance on Saturday night, where they had a 3-goal lead after the first period, and ended up losing that game 6-4. It was kind of a really up and down weekend for them. They rebounded well on Sunday, but a really kind of a roller coaster weekend, don't you think?
Well, anytime you face the teams from the Atlantic Division, you brace yourself a bit because, you know, last year, I think there were four teams in the Atlantic that were had more points than Syracuse, the division, the North Division winner. It's a strong division. But fortunately, as you said, for the Rocket, they were facing two of the bottom feeders of the Atlantic. But their effort, their performance didn't, I would say effort on Springfield. Effort level was a bit better against Hartford,
right.
But their performance in both games wasn't what you'd expect, given that you're facing teams that had been struggling. Particularly Springfield had been really struggling this season. Now, you know, it was a special night. They did have a full crowd, but. You know, so if you look at the box score, you kind of explain that away, but you know, neither team played that well. The first period was awful. It was sloppy. It was poorly played, even though the Rocket got three late goals and ended up, with a 3-0 lead, going into first intermission. But it wasn't quite that kind of game, to start off.
No, not at all. In fact, we spoke to, Chris Terry after the game, and this has happened this season before, where they've had a semi cushy lead and they've ended up blowing it, and not getting any points or perhaps losing in overtime. And here's what Chris Terry had to say about giving up leads and what they need to learn from that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're still learning as a team, but, you know, there's enough experience in this room that we need to. 3-0 lead game needs to be over. It needs to be 2 points in the bank, and you know, we'll learn from this, and hopefully this will be the last one we kind of let loose.
And hopefully this will be the last one that we let loose. I mean, that's, you know, it is one of those things where they know that they're putting themselves in these situations where, yes, it's early in the season, but these points matter at, you know, come March and come April. And when you have a lead, to give it up, especially against a team that's struggling, as you said, as much as Springfield had been, it's a really disappointing way to lose.
And, you know, five unanswered goals,
yeah.
For Springfield, and Lavelle, as they've been doing, this season, have gotten themselves into penalty trouble, and the penalty kill isn't very good. And they just not only allowed the team back in, but they handed the game, and that shouldn't happen. You know, Chris Terry's point, it shouldn't happen to a lineup that has so many veterans in it.
Right.
You know, this team is different than it, differently assembled, different composition this year than it has been for the past several years. Lots of vets, lots of leadership, and they're just too experienced and too talented to let a very young team from Springfield back in the way they did.
Right. Well, you know, and when we spoke to Sylvain Lefebvre after the game, you know, he basically laid it down that they had to turn around the next day and simply be better. It was a short turnaround for them. They then left Springfield after the game. Thankfully, a short commute just about a half an hour down the road to Hartford, Connecticut. But again, you're still traveling after the game and then a 5 o'clock start the next day. And it was a bit of a nail biter on Sunday. Surprisingly, they had scored a goal and Hartford came back to tie it up. And then in the waning minutes, went up 2-1. And miraculously that, you know, resiliency is a word that the coach likes to use a lot. His team really buckled down and managed to tie the game again, I'd say 20 to 30 seconds later, to force overtime and then won in overtime. So it was a really huge comeback win from the night before. You could tell that they didn't want to have the same fate that they had the night before, where they had a lead and late in the game gave it up and lost it. They weren't going to let that happen again. It was a really good show of character, I thought, by the team to just get back on it and make sure they came home with the win.
It was, yeah, that could have been much, much different. It was a much better defensive effort, much better effort overall in that game. And it was tight. It was tight checking. It was tight all the way through. And so with a minute and a half left, it was still 1-1. And then at that point, Jordan Boucher with a really bad giveaway, a stick lifted, and they give up that goal. And I thought with 1:24 left, I thought that was going to be it.
That's it. Yeah.
But 33 seconds later, it's Chris Terry, and he forces overtime. And Daniel Audet got the overtime winner. You know, so all smiles after the game, but it could have turned
right
out very, very differently. Very,
it could
very
have.
Different.
And all of this with a rookie goaltender backstopping them, with Michael McNiven making his pro debut this weekend in back-to-back games. The coach did happen to mention that he liked McNiven's game both nights. He did not lay Saturday night's loss at the feet of Michael McNiven. There of the six goals against, well, one was an empty netter. So the five goals that went in on McNiven, there were one or two that he'd probably really like to have back, but a lot of it was defensive breakdown. After the victory on Sunday, here's what Sylvain had to say about just about the team's performance in general.
You know, we're a team that responds, and we showed that tonight. I thought that we were all over Hartford for a major part of the game. Their goalie, you know, kept them in the game many times. Although McNiven had to make a few saves in the first period early. And, you know, I like this game. You know, he played well. There's a bunch of guys, that had really good contributions tonight. But all in all, you know, we played a strong, solid game.
So pretty good words of praise on a somewhat shaky weekend team-wise, but some pretty nice words of praise from Sylvain Lefebvre on McNiven's debut this weekend.
Let me just correct myself. I said Jordan Boucher, misspoke there. It was Stéphane LeBlanc, was on defense, gave up the puck, and the five-hole goal. As far as Michael McNiven, put in a tough spot. you know, with the difficulties, the injury difficulties in Montreal, he was all of a sudden, he comes from the ECHL, and he's not backing up somebody. He's all of a sudden a starter. And,
yeah,
you know, it was kind of no matter what happens, he's in there. There was an emergency signing of Etienne Marcoux from the Indy Fuel. There's no way he was getting in the goal. So it was McNiven's net for the weekend.
Right.
So he was under the gun, and you know, he admitted after the game he was a bit nervous to start, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
But you saw at that point, it was in the first period, the Rocket were on the penalty kill. McNiven sprawled out and made three pad saves. Rebound went back out and it was fired back in, and he made a windmill, he made a glove save with the big windmill sauce, and you know, he tapped his pads, and you could see at that point, okay, I'm in this game, and I can do this.
Yeah.
This is open. He was good. He was very good. He didn't get much help.
No, he didn't.
In the first game, but made some big saves on Sunday afternoon as well. And I thought he looked a lot more calm, a lot more confident. He said that things happen a little bit faster in the AHL than in the ECHL or junior that he's used to. But I think, you know, he not only pleased the coach, but I think he pleased himself that, he can do the job.
Well, we did actually take some time and speak with Michael McNiven on Saturday night after the loss. So I have actually two clips of audio from him that I thought were pretty significant. The first, I'm going to play them back to back. The first is kind of what you were just speaking about, Rick, is McNiven's response on how playing in the AHL is a different experience. And then the second is a general clip about just what the call-up means to him and seizing the opportunity while he has it.
Yeah, you know, it's a faster game here than junior in the East Coast League, so you got to read the play a bit more and watch it develop. And you know, practice makes perfect, so you know, obviously there's work to be done, and you know, I got to keep doing the same thing day in and day out. Well, obviously it's an opportunity, and like any other opportunity, I got to make the most of it. You know, regardless of where I play, any situation can happen, and you know, it's happened fast in Vegas, and you know, very quickly in Montreal now too. So, you know, you always got to have a ready mindset, and like I said, every day you got to work hard and keep learning new things and getting better each and every day.
Really great attitude from a guy, A, who had just lost a terrible game in his pro debut, but for a young goaltender, seems to have a pretty good head on his shoulders.
Absolutely. Has some confidence. He's much more emotional than a Charlie Lindgren. But not emotional in the same way as a Zach Fucali, let's say. But very vocal during the games. He was directing the players in front of him. He was taking charge, as he should, and good on the glove, good on the pad work lower down, seemed to be tracking the puck pretty well, and isn't afraid to go out of his net to play the puck. So I thought it was a very good debut, and congratulations to him for picking up his first AHL win on Sunday. And that'll do wonders for his confidence.
Absolutely. You know, and as we mentioned, I have one other clip from Coach Lefebvre where he's just talking about liking the bounce back from his team, but as we were mentioning a few minutes ago, that every game is important, and so this is him kind of, you know, he's looking at the next couple of weeks coming up. They've got a really hectic schedule the next couple of weeks, including some divisional rivalry games. And this is just a comment that Lefebvre had regarding kind of the state of things as they are right now.
But every game's important, you know, and even, you know, it's a tough loss last night. You know, when you're leading 3-0 after one, you know, it could have been a great weekend. But you know what, having said that, I like the way we responded tonight. I like the way that we played, you know, 63 minutes. So in the resiliency, like you said, we need to show that every game.
And I think that's really what it boils down to. And I think time and again, when we speak to Sylvain after games like this, where they've bounced back well, resiliency always seems to be the key with him. And he finds a way to inspire that bounce back, that motivation, that spark that his players need to get back on their feet the next game. So kudos to them on a good ending to the weekend to head back to Laval. One other player that I did want to just quickly I have some audio clips on is someone who, and we're gonna talk about him a little bit more coming up here in another segment in a different way, but just want to speak briefly about Jakub Jurábek, who has been a topic of conversation since the beginning of the season. Everyone knows that he's transitioning from the European size ice to the smaller North American ice. And he's typically been paired on the second pairing with Tom Parisi. And you know, Rick, I'll let you kind of give your analysis of how you think Jurábek is playing. He's a player that we get asked a lot of questions about how he looks and whatnot. You know, I think there's times that he looks very good and there's times that he looks like there's still some things he needs to work on. Where are you seeing his development so far?
I think he's on track. But I think saying that, you know, there's, as you said, lots of talk about call-ups and whatnot. In my opinion, he's not ready. Now, my opinion is going to differ with his agent, Alan Walsh, and it's not the first time Alan Walsh and I have disagreed on things. You know, Alan Walsh pointed out in a tweet, as he's wont to do, how he's, you know, I think third in plus minus. He's his client has 9 assists on the year, and that's all great. That's wonderful. He's making the adjustment, but he's not quite there yet. And as you said, there are games that he looks like you know, this is all coming easy for him. Skates well, moves the puck well, gets involved in the offense. But there's other times when he just hasn't figured out, you know, he'll make the wrong turn in his own end. Forwards are coming at him from different angles and they go right around him pretty easily. He still hasn't figured out his defensive game, his positioning, his how aggressive he can be, how passive. And I think he's tending to be a bit too passive. So he's working those things out, and I think it would be a mistake to bring him up now before he's had a chance to fully get adjusted to the North American ice, and would be exposed, you know, far more quickly and easily at the NHL level. So
sure,
he said he's enjoying playing with Tom Parisi. They match up pretty well. Give him some more games with Laval before rush him into anything with the Canadians and their difficulties that they're having on defense.
Sure.
At the NHL
level. And we're going to touch more on that as we said here in another segment. Right. What I want to kind of focus on is how he feels his development's going as well. We did ask him that. We did an interview with him after Saturday night's game. And when we asked, how do you feel the season's going so far and that transition to the smaller ice, this is what he had to say.
Yeah, you know, I guess better and better. I just trying to put to the head what coach told me after every game, and you know, just stay focused on my job here, and you know, play simple games and just play my game.
And just play my game. Again, it's a very, very friendly guy, again, after a very disappointing loss, Rick, but seems to know what he needs to work on and is aware of things that he needs to work on. And I liked how he mentioned, you know, I just want to work on the things that the coach tells me after every game that I need to work on.
He's very coachable and he's paying attention. You know, Donald Dufresne would be the one to work with him and giving him tips through the game. And I've seen improvements so far in the 13 games that he's played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some room yet, and I'm sure that he'll focus, as he said, and be ready for that call up when it comes.
We also asked him, you know, being new to the team this year, how team chemistry was going, and you alluded to the fact that he mentioned mentioned Tom Parisi's name in a positive way. As we said, he's been paired with Parisi for most of the season. Ironically enough, he was not paired with Tom on Sunday in Hartford. He was actually paired was he with Taormina on Sunday, I believe,
on the top pairing.
So here's what Jacob Yarbeck had to say just in general about what it's been like fitting in with this team and the chemistry that he's developing.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm playing now a couple of games with Tom Parisi, and I guess we are on the same wave. You know, he's a good skater too, and a really good guy, and he helping me a lot, so it's nice. And We have a good part, like good team, good guys here, and we have to just show it on the ice.
We just have to show it on the ice. On the converse side of that, we actually interviewed Tom Parisi then the next night. And so we said, okay, well, Jacob Yarbeck says that he likes playing with you. How do you feel about being paired with him? And here's what Tom Parisi had to say.
It's been great. I mean, we've been paired for most of the season now, not tonight, but most of the season so far, and it's been great. He's a good player. He moves the puck well. We share similar assets, so it's nice to use bounce off each other, and he's a bit older and more pro experience. So for me, I get to learn from him a bit and what he's experienced, and for him, coming over to North America, I can kind of try to help him out where I see fit as well. So it's been a great chemistry so far with me and him, and we're enjoying it. We're having fun together.
Isn't that what you love to hear from teammates?
Absolutely. Speaking positively, speaking about not only the chemistry off the ice, but speaking about how they complement each other on the ice. And, you know, Parisi's a bit more the shooter of that pairing.
Yeah.
In terms of goals and shots on goal and whatnot. Yarabic is more the playmaker, and they both skate very well, but they complement each other very well.
They do. And I liked, you know, I appreciated that Yarabic focused on him and said, you know, he's really helping him out and a lot and so forth. But I really liked Tom Parisi's commentary that, oh yeah, you know, I'm, you know, cause Tom Parisi has played on this team before. He's not a new face this season. And he said, oh yeah, you know, I'm happy to help him out and help him with things. But then he also says, but I'm learning from him as well, because he's played in Europe. He's got more experience. He's got experiences that I don't have. And so it's really nice to see how, you know, they're helping each other and that Tom's not above learning from the new guy, essentially. I think that's a really good example to set for other players on the team as well.
Absolutely.
So, going back quickly, just for a moment, to that dismal game on Saturday night. We talk about how they gave up a 3-goal lead. They weren't playing well to begin with, but they managed to get 3 goals. They were up by 3 goals. Well, by the end of the second period, Springfield had come back, tied 3-3. So the beginning of the third period in this game was a crucial moment, crucial point in the game. Is it a moment where the Rocket are going to be able to come back out, right the ship, and come away with the 2 points? Or is the disaster from the second period going to continue? And yet again, we have seen this happen in the AHL before. And it's one thing when officials make mistakes on, I whistled it for offsides and it shouldn't have been, things like that. But there are times that the officials make enormous mistakes that completely change the course of the game. And that is something that happened in this game on Saturday night. The Springfield Thunderbirds scored a goal 37 seconds into the third period. Lefebvre decided to challenge the goal. It's my impression that he was looking to see if there was a kicking motion the puck.
Yeah, it was off the skate. Right. Curtis Volk was off his skate and in. So he challenged it. Of course he went.
Absolutely. The officials give it a lengthy review. They determine the goal stands. Okay, fine. Coach loses his timeout. He lost his challenge. And then suddenly this ruckus occurs because they announce that Laval has been assessed a penalty for delay of game for not winning the challenge, which is not a rule in any AHL rulebook. And I thought Sylvain was going to come over the boards. And the ref would not come over and give him an explanation. I mean, this rule simply does not exist at the AHL level, that if you lose a challenge, that you get penalized for it and you lose your timeout. And in fact, you know, so that goal stands fine. Well, on the ensuing power play that should have never been a power play, Springfield scores again. And so now the team is down 2 goals. It's 5-3 instead of only being 1 goal out of it. Changes everything about the emotions on the bench, what's happening on the ice, and the officials had to eat crow the next day. They had the same officiating crew in Hartford on Sunday, and Lefebvre did tell us that the official came up to him before the game and apologized and said, "I screwed up. I shouldn't have done that." It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, not only official apologized, but the AHL said that a mistake had been made by the officials. It was, you know, as we said, the Laval had a 3-0 lead at the end of the first. Springfield had tied it up 3-3 going into by the end of the second, going into the third period, and to give up an early goal is tough. It's a bit deflating.
Mm-hmm.
But then to get that penalty called the way it did. And at first I thought that Sylvain had said something and it was a bench minor, but he didn't. They explained, no, it was because a penalty for losing the challenge. And the beat guy next to me from Springfield, "Oh yeah, that's in the rule." I said, "No, it's not
no,
in the
it's
rule.
Not.
It's just not in the AHL rule book." That simply, you know, let's acknowledge Laval didn't play very well, but that certainly had a huge impact on the outcome of the game.
Absolutely. There, you know, who's to say that they couldn't have crawled their way back out of just a 1-goal deficit, tied it up again, and maybe things end up differently. And as we just heard Sylvain say in that interview, every game is important. Every pair of points is important. And, you know, when the league's officials make big mistakes like that, it means something to teams. It really does. They just have to be better. You know, getting fired up about that actually is a great warm up to, I'm assuming what's going to become maybe one of my favorite segments on this show, and that's officially going to be my rant of the week. I went on a bit of a rant last week, and I've actually got two things that I'd like to discuss this week, Rick, which just really have me fired up. And one of them we actually started to touch on a little bit ago. So let's go back to that. And that's, in this case, the example is Jacob Yarabek, but in general, my rant is about media in Montreal and fans in Montreal clamoring to call up players from the AHL to the NHL team simply based on their stat line and not knowing if that player is ready, if they should be called up. And we rush development of young prospects all the time. And people don't seem to understand that it's not as easy as just, oh, come play a few games and then go back down and then be wonderful and then come up and play a few. It's all of that goes into development of a player. How much ice time are they getting when they're in the NHL versus the AHL? And is that more beneficial for them to play less minutes in the National League or more minutes in the American League? And again, you're running things off of a stat line. As you mentioned, our good buddy Alan Walsh there, who happens to be your Epic's agent, and the tweet that you were referring to, I am also one of the prestigious many who have been blocked by Alan Walsh, but I do have his tweet right here that says, Montreal prospect defenseman Jacob Yarabek registers 2 assists today with Laval in the AHL. In 13 games played, he has 1 goal, 9 assists, 10 points, and an incredible plus 12, which is 3rd in the AHL. Well, great. Yes, those things are all true. But in typical Alan Walsh style, as you mentioned, Rick, he's doing this to pump the tires of a player that he wants. He's trying to influence a call up. That's, you know, he's not just proudly pumping the tires of a player he represents. He's got an agenda. And so now everyone in Montreal is piling on the, oh, let's call up Jacob Yarabek. Well, he's not ready for that, right?
Yeah, and at least even though he has a few extra characters, he didn't say, and you know, by the way, Tom Parisi stinks.
Well, yeah.
which is exactly what he did when he was tweeting the very same thing in the early days of Twitter. When he was tweeting, and nobody really knew who Alan Walsh was, and he was tweeting all these positive stats about Halak and saying, but Carey Price stinks. And
yeah.
So I kind of exposed him because I knew who he was. And we had the back and forth on Twitter that made it to Hockey Night in Canada. And Kelly Rudy, bless him, was in my corner. And the one and only time my name was mentioned on Hockey Night in Canada. But Alan Walsh has a history of this. And this cheerleading, and it's not only agents, it's the media too. It's funny, I was reminded last week that when the announcement was made that that the AHL the Canadiens AHL franchise was moving from St. John's to Laval, I was invited on the Hockey Buzz podcast, and it was a topic of conversation, and this is a year and a half ago. And, everybody was, oh, it's wonderful. Oh, they're close by. It'll be easy for call-ups. And they'll be able to watch more carefully. And all of that is true. But at the time, I said, but there is a negative side to this. There's going to be more media exposure. And the kind of media that is in Montreal, there's cheerleaders, there's activists. And they're going to be exerting pressure, not only fans, but media, exerting pressure on the organization for
right.
their particular favorite call-ups. And we've already seen that with respect to Delorier and Jelena. So it's there is some negative to this. And this is there are times when just the nasty side comes out. And we've been exposed to the negative aspects of having your franchise so close and so much more attention being given to them, the AHL franchise, that is.
Well, and it's funny, you know, the folks who have not had the pleasure of being blocked by Alan Walsh yet, because he doesn't like when anybody challenges his opinions. The people who do follow him still were very mixed on this tweet. I'm just looking down through the replies on this tweet. And we have somebody who says, well, guess you're angling to get him called up. Why don't you just pick up the phone and call Bergevin instead of using Twitter to grandstand? There's another guy who says, so I guess you're saying all of this because you're his agent. And then you get the flip side of it. You get the hangers-on who say, I can't believe this guy's not up with the big club yet. Man, what is Bergevin doing? The Habs management are beyond frustrating. You have Stuart Brooks who says he outplayed everyone but Mete in camp. He outplayed everyone but Mete in camp. Never deserved to be sent down in the first place. He's our only playmaking D-man, and he's in the AHL.
Urabic, with all due respect to him, and he would tell you the same thing. He didn't have a great camp. He was kind of under the radar. But it was because he was still getting used to things. He was there was no reason. He wasn't one of the pending call ups at the beginning of the season. It just that's a lie. It just didn't happen.
No. And again, this comes from people latch on to these concepts because they see stats that are presented in a positive way. And many times without having ever watched a player play a single game in the AHL, just, you know, and okay, maybe they've seen him play in the preseason in the NHL, but that's a much different environment. You know, then it's like the stampede down across the Bell Center to let's head to Laval and bring him back on our shoulders. And it's just patience, people. I beg for patience. Players need time to not only develop, and just because they start to do things well and start to perform and start to get some points doesn't mean that they're fully locked in with confidence yet. You can't rush the process all the time. You really can't. And then you call guys up and maybe they do some good things, and then they do some not so good things, or maybe they're not living up to expectations, and then they get sent back down to work on some things. It happens every day in the NHL and the AHL. Guys get called up, guys get sent down. It's not a fun process, I can imagine. I can't speak from experience because I'm not a hockey player, but you know, every player who gets sent down from the AHL is going to inevitably have a mix of emotions of frustration, disappointment, sometimes anger, not understanding, or it's going to take, you know, a moment to come to grips with that and then refocus. And my true rant this week is the vultures of the Montreal media, and I'm looking right at you, RDS, because you were the worst proponent of this week. Mike McCarron got unceremoniously sent down to Laval early last week, and RDS could not wait the next morning, gleefully rubbing their hands together like vultures outside the locker room, not 12 hours after he'd been sent down to Laval very unexpectedly, I guess. Could not wait to interview him and make a spectacle out of it. And the headline from Eric LeBlanc on RDS.ca, the English translation of it: Michael McCarron is furious following his dismissal to the American League. Well, that's going to get you clicks on your website. And it's also sensationalizing something that happens every frickin' day in this league. Guys get sent down, they're not going to be in a good mood. In this article, I'm assuming they, I don't know, cornered McCarron the next morning after practice and he agreed to talk to them. And, you know, LeBlanc puts in this sentence, that said, and I'm quoting here, that said, his mood had nothing of his usual joie de vivre. Well, what the hell do you expect? I mean, he says he, according to McCarron, he wasn't even given a very full explanation as to why he was being sent down. And it hasn't even been 12 hours. You have to give these guys time to hockey is not, yes, it's a business. Yes, it's a sport. But being called up and being sent down bring big emotions along with it. And you have to give them a little bit of breathing space and a little bit of credit for having to deal with that constant freaking roller coaster. And Rick, you started to mention how last year, you know, you were on the Hockey Buzz podcast to talk about some of that negative, some of the negative aspects of the team being close to Laval. And yes, the media is one of them. Last year, the last 2 years, if a guy would get sent down, he'd fly back to St. John's and he would just be able to, whoever it was, would be able to sit with it and come to terms with it and refocus on the task at hand to try to get called back up again. Now there is no, you know, flight to St. John's buffer zone for the media. The vultures are there the next morning and they can't wait to dance on the proverbial grave of whoever's been sent down. And I can't even imagine what it's going to be like the next time this happens to a guy who gets called up and then sent back down. You know, I don't recall seeing an article of this length on RDS at all yet this season regarding an Anglophone player, but they certainly had a very lengthy article about how furious Mr. McCarron was at being sent down. And I really think it's unfair to these players who work their butts off and are scrutinized at every level. Let him be mad if he wants to be mad. You don't have to splash it all over your headlines. You really don't.
And obviously it was going for the clicks. The entire it was an irresponsible column by Eric LeBlanc. And you know, it, as I said, it was better when they were ignored when RDS ignored the team when they were in St. John's. Just the tone, the way the whole thing is written, and there's a quote from McCarron, which he said in a bitter voice. Stop it. It's just the two takeaway or the two points that they wanted to be pushing in that piece was that McCarron was furious, and he has no right to be, you know. And that he didn't know why he was sent down, and how could he not know, given that he has 0 points in his 8 games? I mean, what they don't understand, again, they're going on the stat line and all of that, making a big point about how he has not collected a point at the NHL level this season. But we talked to Mike McCarron, and he told us that before his call up, in his discussions with the Montreal coaching staff, when he was called up, he said, "I'm not going to be a points guy. My role is this: to be good on the faceoffs." And he 54.9% at the NHL level, one of the best on the Canadians at the faceoff level. And that faceoffs weren't always his strength. He worked hard on that.
He's worked very hard on that.
54.9% on faceoffs. They wanted him to be a net front presence. There was Jordy Benn's goal just before McCarron was sent down. There was Mike McCarron in front of the net screening. If he's not there, the Jordy Benn goal doesn't happen. McCarron didn't get a point on that, but he did exactly what he was supposed to be doing. They wanted him to be responsible defensively. He has been. They wanted him to be more disciplined. He has been. He's been all business. And you know, McCarron said in the piece, you know, it's a little frustrating. I'm happy with the way I played. I don't know why I was sent down, but you know, my ice time was declining, and it was. He in his 8 games, he was averaging 8 minutes a game. How can they expect him to get engaged, to improve? It for the Canadians for a player not to know why they're being sent down, that should never happen. But
no.
Then, as you say, the media to jump all over him, be a vulture, exploit any emotion that he has for or any frustration that he has. is just absolutely and utterly irresponsible.
I agree. And, you know, part of that frustration on my part is I've, you know, even outside the sports arena, I've been a television reporter and journalist for years. There's a reason why I never wanted to do hard news, commercial news, because I find too much of the human element in the people that I interview. So I could never be the person that has to stick a microphone in the face of someone who just lost everything they owned in a house fire, or whose loved one just died tragically in a car accident or something like that. I personally, as a journalist, I don't feed and breathe off of other people's angst. And so that is carried forward in my sports journalism career as well. I get no pleasure out of having to interview coaches or players after a bad game, after a send down, after, you know, anything negative like that. I find it leaves a very bad taste in my mouth when I see members in the mainstream media who do exactly that, because that's what they're supposed to do, I guess, using very sarcastic air quotes here. So be better, RDS. Could you try? Could you just try to be better and give these guys some credit that they work really hard and it's really a roller coaster for them when they're coming in and out of the AHL? And rant, I suppose. all right. Well, we'll leave the Rocket there for now. And just quickly, we're just going to scoot through some AHL news very quickly, because we did spend a lot of time on that first segment today. So I just quickly want to make notes of two things that we always touch on. Player of the Week from the CCM AHL Player of the Week is goaltender Spencer Martin from the San Antonio Rampage. He made 73 saves off of 74 shots in two games last week. So I can certainly understand why he was player of the week last week. So good for him. And there was also a slew of suspensions announced last week. The first of which was last week's CCM AHL player of the week, Mason Marchmont from the Toronto Marlies, has been suspended for two games for a cross-checking incident at Binghamton. Scott Saborn from the San Diego Gulls got two games for the exact same thing, a cross-checking incident at Stockton. Rochester's Andrew McWilliams was suspended for a game for an illegal check to the head at Belleville. And Wilkes-Barre Scranton's Andre Pedan, three games for a charging incident at home versus Providence. So quite
that
a few suspensions.
Dirty.
Yeah, I don't like watching him play. He's always in somebody's face, and he's always playing on the edge the wrong way. So he's out for three games. So there were quite a few suspensions last week. One thing that Rick mentioned in that terrible game in Springfield on Saturday night was that they had a full house. Well, you might find that, but didn't you say they were 2-11 and they had a full house? Well, yes, they did have a full house, even though they were 2-11. Brilliant marketing move on their part, I have to say. Saturday night was David Ortiz night at the Springfield Thunderbirds, where they had a banner put up for David Ortiz, Big Poppy, for those of you who are familiar with baseball. He was there for the night with the 2013 MLB World Series Championship Trophy, signing autographs, and man, they milked his experience, his appearance. And he was fantastic. He came out and did the ceremonial puck drop. He came out, he rode out onto the ice on an ATV for the first intermission, and then had a baseball bat and was batting stuffed baseballs up into the crowd. He signed an official David Ortiz number 34 sign for the boards, ad sign for the boards. He went out and autographed that. He seemed to be loving every second of it. And the crowd was, I mean, the energy in the place, Rick, was just unbelievable.
I'm sure he enjoyed the check he got for the appearance as well. So a little tame.
And he was given the key to the city, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that's right. The key to the city, too. Listen, anything Boston sports just turns me the wrong way, so I wasn't terribly excited. But yes, the fans there were plenty of Bruins jerseys. The Springfield themselves were wearing special uniforms that looked like baseball jerseys,
which were hideous.
It was a great night for them, and Ortiz seemed to play along just fine.
He did. In fact, David Brohl was one of the guys who was a healthy scratch that night, and apparently on Instagram, it looked like he managed to bump into Big Poppy downstairs and got him to do a quick little a video with him on Instagram. And Brohl had a caption that said something to the effect of Big Poppy's rooting against us. And Brohl asks David Ortiz, who are we rooting for tonight? And David Ortiz, in his very heavy, the Springfield Thunderbirds. it was great. So even some of the guys from the Laval Rocket had a great time seeing David Ortiz there at the rink on Saturday night. Also, one other thing of note, for those of you who would like to catch a few AHL games, the NHL Network announced this past week a schedule of 10 AHL games that will be aired live on the NHL Network during this season. Only one of them is a Laval Rocket game. It's, of course, it's on Monday, March 12th. It's Laval at Toronto. It's a 3 p.m. game, but they are playing at the ACC for that game. But you can start seeing AHL games starting this Sunday. They are airing the Syracuse Crunch at the Toronto Marlies at 4 Eastern. So there's a series of 10 games. Be sure to check out the schedule for that. It's a great way for people who would like to just see some AHL action. They've got the Crunch, the Marlies, the Chicago Wolves, the Milwaukee Admirals, Cleveland Monsters. It's a great way to start to see some Western Conference teams as well. The Lehigh Valley Phantoms, the Binghamton Devils. So good selection to choose from if folks who aren't subscribed to AHL Live or don't have an AHL rink in their area where they can go watch a game. It's a great way to catch some AHL action. And so it's nice to see the NHL Network picking up a few games. Maybe they could do some more of that down the road. So that will bring us
one more piece of news. One
oh,
more
that's
piece
right.
Of news.
There was a trade. There was a trade. That's right.
A massive, massive trade. I love trades in junior hockey.
Yeah.
I love trades in junior hockey. This is prospect news from the CHL, and the Kootenay Ice were involved in a huge trade. They traded their captain, who happens to be Cale Fleury, who was taken in the third round this past draft. 87th overall by the Montreal Canadiens. Cale Fleury was traded to the Regina Pats. The Regina Pats are this year's host of the Memorial Cup, and so Cale Fleury will be guaranteed to be playing in the Memorial Cup. The Canadiens will have a prospect in the Memorial Cup. Cale Fleury was traded for forward Cole Muir, defenseman Jonathan Smart, a second-round pick in 2018, a sixth-round pick in 2018, and a conditional second-round pick in 2019. Don't you love those junior trades?
I love those junior trades.
Fleury's he's kind of an offensive-minded defenseman. He has 4 goals, 6 assists in 17 games, and Kootenay wasn't – he struggled through last year. Kootenay wasn't very good at all. But on to the Regina Pats, who and with a berth into the Memorial Cup. So good for Cale Fleury.
Excellent. We love to hear that. And Habs fans will enjoy getting – it's always fun to watch those championship tournaments and whatnot when there's a prospect that fans know to be rooting for. So that should be a lot of fun. I guess that will bring us to where are they now? And I'm going to admit you are going to have all of the spotlight on where are they now this week, because I was so excited about our top five that I completely didn't get a where are they now for myself this week. This is your favorite segment anyway. So I yield the floor to you.
Wow.
For Rick's journey in where are they now? Before we get to our top five,
sit back, relax.
We are on a schedule here, so,
All right. Well, today The Montreal Canadiens claimed Antti Niemi, 34-year-old Antti Niemi, from waivers from the Florida Panthers. Niemi has played, well, he's known for his play with Chicago, winning the Cup with them in 2010. He's played for San Jose. He's played for Dallas. He's played for Pittsburgh, Florida, I think all this year. No, actually just Pittsburgh,
probably,
Florida, and Montreal
probably
this season. But still, he's moved around a bit already. Three games for the Pens, two games for the Panthers. He has the distinction of being the 70th ranked goaltender in the NHL, which,
wow,
you know, the goaltending rankings, that's last place. In three starts, he has a record of 0-4-0, coming in to one of the game, two of the games for relief. He has a goals against average of 674 and a save percentage of 822. So, yeah, that sounds great. Because of Carey Price's minor injury, which is apparently not so minor.
Yeah. Where have we heard that before?
Well, exactly. And where we did hear about this before was exactly 2 years ago, about this time, just about this time. And at that time, right now we have a goaltending tandem of Charlie Lindgren and Zach Fucale for the Canadiens. 2 years ago, it was Dustin Tokarski and Mike Condon. Tokarski having won the backup position from Peter Budaj in camp. Price went down with an injury, and it was Tokarski-Condon. So at that point, Bergevin said, I don't think we're going to go very far, as he did again this year.
Yeah.
So he traded Zach Cassian, and Cassian at that point hadn't played a game for the Canadiens.
No.
And he traded him to the Oilers for Ben Scrivens.
Mm-hmm.
And then just over a week later, they dispatched Tokarski to Anaheim for our dear friend and last year's captain, Max Freeberg.
That's right.
So I thought I'd just kind of catch up with Ben Scrivens and see what in the world he is doing. given that the situation is kind of repeating itself. And so what happened to Ben Scrivens? Where is he now, you might say?
Is he in North America?
He's not. No.
Oh. Wow.
He's not. He's over in the KHL.
Oh.
So while we're over there, why don't we do a quick check on some guys that we mentioned previously.
Okay.
We thought it was a kind of a surprise that Nigel Dawes was in amongst the scoring leaders in the KHL. We thought maybe it was an early season thing. We thought maybe it was, you know, just a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
If you look again, Nigel Dawes, first in goals scored, second in points in the KHL.
Wow.
27 games. He has 28 goals, 12 assists for 40 points in 27 games.
Oh, my
games.
God.
Indeed.
Are there takesies, backsies?
And he's still ahead of Kovalchuk.
Can he please come back?
Still ahead of Kovalchuk. Darren Dietz, well known to Ice Caps fans.
Yeah.
He's tied for third in goals in the league by defenseman with 7. And he's almost a point-a-game guy. He's 18 points in 20 games.
Again, can we have takesies, backsies, please?
So we don't need that when it comes to goaltending, because I looked as I did in every goaltending category. I couldn't find Mr. Ben Scrivens near the top of the list.
No.
In goaltenders.
Not surprised.
He's ranked
22nd
among goaltenders in the KHL. At that, it's not a bad record. In 25 games, he has a record of 15-7.
Okay.
226 goals against, .920 save percentage. It's fine.
That's not bad.
It's fine. He's playing for Slavia Lviv. You know that
nice
team.
that team, those guys.
Well, if the name, if that name sounds familiar,
mm-hmm.
does it?
Sure.
That's where Alexander Radulov played for the first 4 years after he left the NHL, after he moved on from Nashville.
Oh, right.
That's exactly where he played.
Okay.
Back then.
Hmm.
So Ben Scrivens, in kind of a, you know, the anti-Niemi, kind of mirroring the Ben Scrivens situation. Ben Scrivens is the Where Are They Now feature for this week.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
And probably the only husband and wife goaltending tandem team that I know.
Probably that's true. I do actually think that's kind of...
Jenny played for... I don't remember. I don't remember where she played. But anyway, she's also a goaltender,
which I think is pretty neat for them.
Yep.
Nicely done. I know our fans very much always enjoy listening to Where Are They Now? So thank you for that. And I apologize, folks. I know I dropped the ball on this one, but it's because I couldn't wait for my top five this week. I really couldn't.
Really?
Yeah. If there's one part, I really enjoy the AHL All-Star game. I can't stand the NHL All-Star weekend, but the AHL All-Star weekend is pretty fun. And one of the things that I think is super fun about it is that the AHL, unlike the NHL, mascots kind of are hit and miss in the NHL. Some teams have them, a lot of teams don't. But in the AHL, I'd have to look it up, but I would say almost every team, if not every team, has a mascot. So the mascots are very prominent in the American League, and all of the mascots show up at the All-Star game as well. And so to see, you know, 20, 25 mascots running around en masse together, being their goofy selves, is absolutely hilariously entertaining to watch. So this week, we're going to take a look at our top five AHL mascots, because some of them are really good and some of them are god awful. So we're not going to touch the bad ones this week. We're going to save that for another week, because there are some bad ones, let me tell you. But there are some really good ones. And so we are going to talk about our favorite AHL mascots, our top five. Were you able to do this one without any honorable mentions, or did you, or were you not able to limit this to five?
I have honorable mentions and exclusions. I have rules.
Okay, well, we have 15 minutes left in this program. Are we going to be able to do it? Okay.
Exclusions.
So what are your exclusions then?
Yeah, the rules are, if you don't skate, you don't get to be on my list. I don't like a mascot that doesn't skate, and there are some. There's
quite a few. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw them at the All-Star game. They came out and then they slid around the ice and fell, and it was not what a mascot's supposed to be. The Moose from Rochester, Duke the dog from the Marlies, and that creepy Crunchman superhero guy from Syracuse.
Yeah, we'll get into those when we do bad mascots.
Yeah, they can't skate, so they're off my list.
Okay. That's your exclusion, or are there
that's
more?
My exclusions. No,
okay,
that's my exclusion. Honorable mentions, I got a few.
Okay.
Quickly. Bruiser from the Hamilton Bulldogs. You know, I couldn't put him in there because Hamilton Bulldogs are now an OHL team.
That's right.
It's kind of a prototypical mascot, just a lovable kind of mascot. Roscoe from the Milwaukee Admirals, super nice hat, just a really nice
hat.
Oh,
yeah, he's got a great hat.
T-Bone from the Texas Steers, Texas Stars,
he's
story.
He's kind of creepy looking, but he's
a steer.
He's intimidating.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
He looks mean.
Frenzy from the San Jose Barracudas,
he's got a great head.
He is
my one and only honorable mention, so I will get in on that one with you as well. He's a barracuda, like
yeah.
He He's a freaking barracuda, and his name is Frenzy. And I noticed in the press release when he was debuted, they said, and Frenzy rhymes with friendly, so the kids will love him. I'm thinking, it's a creepy barracuda that, like, eats people, and you're equating him with friendly. But he's got a great head. He does.
And my only other honorable mention is, and I know you don't like the Rockford Ice Hogs, but Hammy Hog. Like, if you get a hog on skates, that's just kind of fun. It's just kind of fun. So he gets an honorable mention from me.
Nice. All right. Well, I already told you who my honorable mention is. It was Frenzy the Barracuda. So I guess I will get right in with my number five pick.
Do that.
Well, take that. It's Hammy Hog. Yeah.
I thought you didn't like the logo and all of that.
Logos are not mascots.
All right, go ahead.
I can hate a logo and still like a mascot. Hammy Hog, right. And I'm telling you, folks, you have to Google some of these guys. Google Hammy Hog. He is a big, fat, red pig on skates. It's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And coming from, as we've talked about in previous episodes, I have a AAA baseball team here called the Iron Pigs, and they play on the word pig and bacon and ham to the nth degree. So I have an appreciation for the fact that his name is Hammy Hog. I just love it. He's a great mascot. So Hammy Hog from the Rockford Ice Hogs is my number five.
My number five. I'm breaking my, you know, I set rules and now I'm breaking the rule.
Smart.
I know Audie doesn't skate, but he's just too good to leave off the list. So Audie from the Utica Comets, he's a green alien with antennas on his head, great mascot, and so I had to break my own rule to get him on the list as number five.
Well, I commend you for that, because I have Audie at number four. And the first time I went to Utica and I saw him, I literally out loud said, "What the hell is that?" and then I'm like, "Okay, Utica Comets, not a comet. Okay, so comet. I guess he's an alien that lived on a comet. I don't know." But he's neon green. He's got these big alien antenna, but he's got the happiest, like, Muppet. He looks like a giant Muppet, and so the kids love him. And he's just very goofy and silly, and he's really, really fun to watch. So I have Audie at my number four. In fact, the last time we were in Utica, it was really weird. Like, we were there for games. We typically get there and get settled in the press box about 2 hours before puck drops. So there's really nobody in the rink at that point, except for staff and workers and that kind of thing. And the ice crew is usually out tending to the ice, and we're sitting in the press box, and I looked down, a flash of green caught my eye, and I thought, oh, Audie must be out, you know, practicing for some of his stuff for the game and whatnot. And then I looked closer and I realized, wait, did they get a new mascot? It was the weirdest thing. And I'll have to find it and retweet it, because I took a video of it and I tweeted it at the time. There was a frog, a green frog, ice skating all by himself on the rink for like 10 minutes, just up and down and up and down and not talking, not doing anything. There was just a big green frog skating around on the ice for like 10 minutes. It was the weirdest thing. But anyway, I digress.
So Mr. Green Frog, give Audie skating lessons. Get Audie on skates.
There you go.
And then he'll move up.
There you go. All right. So Audie's my number four. Who's your number four?
My number four is Kingston from the Ontario Reign, and just the sass factor alone puts him on my list.
Oh, he's sassy.
And tweets sassy and acts sassy. He's
he is. Well, my number three. Haven't actually had a chance to meet this guy yet, but I'm determined to this year, hopefully at the AHL All-Star Game, because I think he's just adorable, and his name is fantastic. He's the mascot of the Charlotte Checkers, and his name is Chubby.
Chubby Checker?
Well, that, come on, like the cleverness of somebody had to have been given props to Chubby Checker when they named this guy. And he's this big, lovable, chubby, I don't know, dog, like puppy, polar bear. I don't know what he's supposed to be, but he's big and fat and happy, and he's hilarious. And his name's Chubby. I mean, I don't know. I love it. He's my number three.
I have from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, Melvin as my number three. He's kids love him. He's got a puck for a nose, and what else could you? And he's just the most colorful guy. On one hand, I'm going to give it to Lehigh Valley, and you got a great mascot. On the other hand, I'm going to take it away and say that energy team, especially with the mustache man. Most annoying, hands down, in the league.
Thankfully, yes, this is separate from mascots. This is the hype up energy team that Lehigh Valley has. Are quite annoying.
But Melvin gets my number three.
All right. Well, my number two is your number four. Mr. Kingston Rain comes in at number two for me for all the reasons you mentioned. He's a snow leopard who actually was the first mascot for the LA Kings, who made an appearance, God, for the LA Kings, I don't know, years ago, 2004, something like that, and came out of retirement in 2015 to become the mascot for the Ontario Reign, and has been there ever since. He is sassy is a good word for it. He's very sassy. He's got an attitude. He's fun loving. I remember I had tweeted something at the AHL All-Star Game 2 years ago and had tagged him in my tweet saying, this Kingston Rain guy is fantastic. I got to try to get a picture of him at some point. And during the All-Star Game, he tweeted back to me and said, "Where are you? I'll come have my picture taken." And it didn't work out, just with timing and whatnot. So the past year's AHL All-Star Game, I tweeted to Kingston Rain again, and I said, "I still need to get my picture." And he tweeted back, and he was like, "I still want my picture." And sure enough, I found him on the concourse. I got my picture, not with him, but I took a picture of him. Just he's a great mascot for interacting with fans on social media, but also in the stands as well. He's a lot of fun. So Kingston's a pretty cool dude, and so he comes in at number two.
At number two, I have Mick E. Moose, which is a great name, and he's a much better moose than the Moose from Rochester.
Yeah.
He does double duty.
He does.
He's both. Yeah, he's both the mascot for the Manitoba Moose as well as the Winnipeg Jets. He's just got a big, happy, toothy smile, great antlers, and he's got a little an old fashioned leather pilot hat on.
Oh,
goggles,
nice!
You know?
Yeah.
Great looking mascot. Great idea, and he gets my number two.
Well, my number one is the number one by a long shot. By a long shot. And this is not any Homer kind of thing. Melvin from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms is bar none, hands down, best mascot in the AHL. I think a bit of the flamboyance and flair of the Philly Fanatic was part of his inspiration, because his style is very much like the Philly Fanatic. And anybody, you don't even have to like baseball, and you know who the Philly Fanatic is and how goofy and fun and wild and crazy he is. Well, Melvin does the same thing. Melvin is very colorful. He's orange. He's bright orange, and he's got crazy colored hair. I'm glad you asked what he is. And that actually was not scripted, folks. He set me up perfectly there. Melvin Yeah, because he's another one that looks like a Muppet, but you're looking at him, you're like, well, what the heck are you? Like, what are you supposed to be? You're not a phantom. So what are you supposed to be? Well, his species, according to the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, he is a puck-nosed pleidotal.
Now, how did I not know that?
A puck-nosed pleidotal. P-L-A-D-O-D-D-L-E. Puck-nosed pleidotal. And yes, his nose is a giant black puck. And in pleidotal fashion, he's flamboyant. He likes to dance. He drives the heck out of an ATV all over the ice. He's goofy as anything. He does skate. He does a lot of the Philly Fanatic pelvic thrusting and hip circles. And he likes to dump popcorn on people's heads. Popcorn is his favorite food. If you leave a trail of it around the arena, he will follow it around and pick it up and eat it. He is a ton of fun. He's just a joy to watch at every game. The kids love him. They go nuts for Melvin. Melvin is also very good with the social media. His Instagram account and his Twitter account are very active. He does a lot in the community. So really love Melvin. He's my number one pick.
That's a great pick. Mine is, and I have to say, it's not because of his look, because it's kind of ordinary, to be honest. And that is Tux from Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. And he's a penguin. But it's Tux. It's his energy. It's his adventurousness. It's his, maybe I'll go further and say recklessness.
Especially when he's driving his four-wheeler around.
Well, and yes, so Melvin has an ATV, but Tux has like a full-fledged dune buggy.
Yeah, he does.
That he races around, and just wildly and recklessly, that just the energy on this guy. I happen to know, we happen to have met him and off ice, and he's a Canadian, so that's good. And he's also of the bunch. And they had a hockey game at the last All-Star game in AHL All-Star game. Mm-hmm. By far, he's the best hockey player of all the mascots.
That's right. Yes, he was.
By far. He's a great
The penguin can play hockey. Yes.
The penguin can play hockey, so that bumped him right to the top of my list. Nice. And he gets my number one spot.
Excellent. Well, that's our top five. We want to hear your top five. Be sure to tweet us at the AHL Report. Even if it's not your top five, just tell us who your favorite mascot in the AHL is. Could be one that's not even around anymore, because there are plenty of mascots that have retired with teams folding and going defunct and whatnot. So shoot us a message. Let us know who your favorite mascot is. And with that, Rick, we've quickly reached the end of this show. It was another packed edition of From the Press Box, but it was a good one.
Burner. Yeah,
the barn
absolutely.
Burner for sure. The
Great
Rocket
episode.
Have a busy. Thank you. I agree. Same to you. The Rocket have a busy week this week. Utica comes to town on Wednesday night before the Lehigh Valley Phantoms come into town on Friday night, and then they fly out to Manitoba. This is the first time the franchise has done that with some conference. Things switching up and whatnot. So they'll be in Manitoba for two games before they come back for a back-to-back again against Utica at home. So it's a busy schedule for them. We'll, of course, have all of the updates. So be sure to follow us on Twitter at the AHL Report. You can find Rick at All Habs on Twitter, and you can find me at Flyers Rule on Twitter. As always, be sure to listen on Saturday afternoons at 2 p.m. for the live Montreal Canadiens podcast that we offer at Rocket Sports Media, and that's with Rick and host Chris G, and that's the Habs 360 podcast. That's live at 2 p.m. every Saturday. Don't forget to catch that. And we just thank you so much for joining us for another great episode of From the Press Box. We're here to bring you all of the news from the AHL and the Laval Rocket, and we'd love to hear from you, so be sure to hit us up on social media. Until then, we will catch you next week. Thanks so much for joining us.